It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama calls for increased world commitment to combat Ebola crisis, and Arab militaries lead third round of Syria strikes. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama is calling for nations around the world to do more to combat the deadly Ebola epidemic in West Africa, saying the disease threatens regional and global security. He spoke Thursday at a high-level United Nations meeting on Ebola, warning of the potential humanitarian crisis that could kill hundreds of thousands of people in the coming months.
If this epidemic is not stopped, this disease could cause a humanitarian catastrophe across the region. If this epidemic is not stopped, this disease could cause a humanitarian catastrophe across the region. And in an era where regional crises can quickly become global threats, stopping Ebola is in the interest of all of us.
The World Health Organization says the death toll is nearing 3,000. Military teams from two Arab countries led the United States in a third round of airstrikes against the Islamic State, which targeted militant-held oil facilities Thursday in northeastern Syria. The Pentagon reports Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates dropped 80% of the bomb tonnage in the overnight strikes. Iraq says it has evidence of credible threats against subway systems in the United States and Paris. The prime minister told reporters in New York Thursday the information came from captured foreign militants fighting on the side of the Islamic State group in Iraq. U.S. officials say they have no indication of such a plot. This is VOA News. Iran's president is placing heavy blame on Western countries for the rise of extremism in the Middle East, citing colonialism and what he called strategic blunders. Hassan Rouhani told the United Nations General Assembly on Thursday that moderate politicians and elites in the region must provide the leadership to counter violence and terrorism. Mr. Rouhani has been critical of the U.S.-led campaign against the Islamic State group that began with airstrikes in Iraq last month, saying a military approach is not the way to stop the militants. Iranian and Western officials are also hoping to make progress on stalled nuclear talks. In a rare move, Iran's top diplomat met with U.S. and European Union foreign policy chiefs in New York late Thursday. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder has announced his resignation but says he'll remain on the post until a successor is confirmed. VOA's Michael Bowman has more.
America's first African-American president gave the nation its first African-American attorney general. Eric Holder has served for nearly 6 years and is one of President Barack Obama's last remaining original cabinet members. A close Obama confidant, Holder argued for the closing of the U.S. detention facility at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and for trying foreign terror suspects in U.S. civilian courts. Domestically, he led the charge to overhaul federal sentencing guidelines, which helped bring about the first decline in the nation's prison population in decades. President Obama is not expected to immediately nominate a successor. Once he does, the Senate confirmation process is likely to take place after the November midterm elections. Until then, Holder is expected to remain on the job. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Zambian President Michael Sata has been admitted to a hospital in New York City. Mr. Sata was in New York for the annual gathering of world leaders at the United Nations General Assembly, where he was scheduled to speak Wednesday. He did not deliver the address to the 193-member world body. The press office at the New York Police Department told VOA he was taken to the hospital Thursday but gave no further details about which hospital or his condition. The office did confirm news reports that State Department doctors treated Mr. Sata earlier in the day at his hotel. The 77-year-old president had not been seen in public in almost 3 months before he attended the opening of the Zambian parliament last week. At the start of his address in Lusaka, Mr. Sata jokingly told the legislative body, "I am not dead." Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels, and this is VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Body Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President Barack Obama calls for increased global commitment to combat Ebola in West Africa.
The Ebola virus is spreading at alarming speed. If unchecked, this epidemic could kill hundreds of thousands of people in the coming months.
West African health ministers meet this weekend in Ghana's capital to strategize on Ebola. Ghana's president says his country's economy is rebounding. UN Secretary General urges South Sudan's warring parties to end hostilities. And Zimbabwe's president calls for the lifting of U.S. and European Union sanctions on his country.
Why, I ask, should Zimbabweans continue to suffer under the American and European yoke of unjustified and unwarranted illegal sanctions?
That's Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe speaking Thursday at the UN General Assembly. Ethiopia's Prime Minister sees progress for peace in Somalia as Al-Shabaab is degraded. And human rights groups hailed ICC investigation into Central African Republic war crimes. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama is calling for nations around the world to do more to combat the deadly Ebola epidemic in West Africa, saying the disease threatens regional and global security. He spoke Thursday at a high-level United Nations meeting on Ebola, warning that the potential humanitarian crisis that could kill hundreds of thousands of people in the coming months.
The Ebola virus is spreading at alarming speed. Thousands of men, women, and children have died. Thousands more are infected. If unchecked, this epidemic could kill hundreds of thousands of people in the coming months. Last week, I visited the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, which is mounting the largest international response in its history. And I announced that in addition to the civilian response, the United States would establish a military command in Liberia to support civilian efforts across the region. Today, that command is up and it is running. Our commander is on the ground in Monrovia, and our teams are working as fast as they can to move in personnel, equipment, and supplies. We're working with Senegal to stand up an air bridge to get health workers and medical supplies into West Africa faster. We're setting up a field hospital, which will be staffed by personnel from the U.S. Public Health Service, and a training facility where we're getting ready to train thousands of health workers from around the world. We're distributing supplies and information kits to hundreds of thousands of families so they can better protect themselves. And together with our partners, we'll quickly build new treatment units across Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, where thousands will be able to receive care. Meanwhile, in just the past week, more countries and organizations have stepped up their efforts, and so has the United Nations. So this is all progress, and it is encouraging. But I want us to be clear. We are not moving fast enough. We are not doing enough. We know from experience that the response to an outbreak of this magnitude has to be fast, and it has to be sustained. It's a marathon, but you have to run it like a sprint. And that's only possible if everybody chips in, if every nation and every organization takes this seriously. Everybody here has to do more. International organizations have to move faster and cut through red tape and mobilize partners on the ground as only they can. More nations need to contribute critical assets and capabilities, whether it is air transport or medical evacuation or healthcare workers or equipment or treatment. To my fellow leaders from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, to the people of West Africa, to the heroic health workers who are on the ground as we speak, in some cases putting themselves at risk, I want you to know that you are not alone. We're working urgently to get you the help you need, and we will not stop, we will not relent until we halt this epidemic once and for all.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama speaking Thursday at a high-level United Nations meeting on Ebola in West Africa. Regional health ministers from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, will meet this weekend in Ghana's capital, Accra, to evaluate the implementation of strategic plans aimed at combating the Ebola disease. Haruna Wakani, acting ECOWAS Communications Director, tells reporter Peter Clotty the regional group is working closely with Ebola-affected ECOWAS countries, international health partners, to contain and subsequently eradicate the disease.
First and foremost, on the outbreak of this epidemic, ECOWAS, through the president of the commission, had rallied member states to meet and agree on a common strategy, which resulted in the meeting of the ministers of health in Accra, where a strategic action plan was taken to combat the spread of the epidemic. And as we speak, another meeting is also scheduled, also in Accra, as a follow-up to this initiative, which includes the active participation and coordination of the West African Health Organization, which is an institution of the community charged with the responsibility of managing public health. Also, other international development institutions like the World Health Organization and the United Nations as a whole have been invited and have been very much involved in looking for common solutions.
Critics say ECOWAS has been lethargic to combat this dreaded disease, to help these countries in capacity building to address this very basic challenge until over 2,000 people have been infected and dead of the disease before ECOWAS started making efforts to combat this.
Well, these criticisms are surely unfounded because, you see, it's an epidemic that suddenly came up upon the populations of the sub-region. So to say ECOWAS has not done anything, it will be difficult to justify that kind of position. But don't forget, ECOWAS is not an implementing agency. It is a coordinating body. And that is exactly what it has been doing, to rally around the member states, help them in building capacity, help generate sufficient information at the international arena to attract attention on this cause. And that is exactly what ECOWAS has successfully done.
How has the implementation of the strategic plan to combat this infection been so far since it was taken at the first meeting by ministers of health in the region recently in Accra?
Well, as you can see, I think the sub-region needs to be commended for even the containment efforts so far recorded, because except for maybe one or two countries, the spread is definitely almost under control today. And this is as a result of the interest generated at the international scene and efforts and assistance that is pouring into the sub-region, which is not far from the effort made by the community to attract attention.
Haruna Wakani is the acting ECOWAS Communications Director. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama said his country's economy has begun to recover from the global economic downturn that led to rising cost of living and a massive drop in export earnings. Speaking Thursday at the 69th UN General Assembly in New York, President Mahama said homegrown measures taken by his government are paying dividend.
Like so many African countries, Ghana has been through dark economic times and our seemingly changing fortunes with this uncomfortable familiarity brought on a fear of regression. But this was merely a setback, only a slight reversal. Already the homegrown measures of fiscal stabilization that we have taken are yielding results. Only this month, Ghana surprised even its most ardent critics when it launched its third Eurobond for an amount of $1 billion. This successful flotation represents a return of investor confidence in the prospects of the Ghanaian economy. This confidence is apparent in the recent rebound of our domestic currency, the cedi. Over the last 2 weeks, the cedi has appreciated significantly against its major trading currencies. Last year, when I addressed this August assembly, I explained that it is not sympathy we want in Africa. It is partnership, the ability to stand on our own feet. In an attempt to establish such a partnership, we have entered into discussions with the IMF.
On gender equality, President Mahama touted Ghana's long history of commitment to improving the lives of women.
This administration boasts one of the highest numbers of women appointed to public office in the history of Ghana. 7 of our cabinet ministers are women, as are the holders of several senior public service positions. And I hope the fact that they are too numerous to list is an indication that we are reaching towards the ideal.
On the deadly Ebola crisis in West Africa, the Ghanaian leader said he has offered his country's capital, Accra, as a base of operation for activities geared towards containing the disease. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 26. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Zambian President Michael Sata has been admitted to a hospital in New York City. Mr. Sata was in New York for the annual gathering of world leaders at the United Nations General Assembly, where he was scheduled to speak on Wednesday. He did not deliver the address to the 190th member world body. The press office at the New York Police Department told VOA he was taken to the hospital on Thursday, but gave no further details about what happened or which hospital or Mr. Sata's condition. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe on Thursday castigated Western-imposed sanctions against his country at the United Nations General Assembly, calling them evil and diabolical. Mr. Mugabe called on the United Nations to condemn the sanctions, urging the United States and the European Union to immediately lift the measures. Sandra Nyaira of VOA's Zimbabwe service has details.
Addressing the United Nations General Assembly, Mr. Mugabe once again castigated America and the European Union for allegedly using what he said were illegal sanctions as a policy tool to achieve short-term political objectives, in particular, regime change.
Mr. President, regime change is a diabolical, illegal policy of interference in the domestic affairs of my country. And no good can come from undermining our economy or depriving our citizens of the necessities of life.
He said the sanctions are against the founding principles of the United Nations. The Zimbabwean leader urged the international community to condemn them as he called for the immediate and unconditional removal of the measures.
Why, I ask, should Zimbabweans continue to suffer under the American and European yoke of unjustified and unwarranted illegal sanctions? These evil sanctions violate the fundamental principles of the United Nations Charter.
He said Zimbabwe was a peaceful nation ready to engage in constructive dialogue for mutual beneficial relations.
Zimbabwe firmly believes that the United Nations should promote dialogue to achieve peace, the rule of law, and common understanding among states. In Africa, the African Union is working tirelessly to push for peace in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in South Sudan, in the Central African Republic, and in Somalia.
Mr. Mugabe also called for the expeditious reform of the Bretton Woods institutions, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, as the world discusses and starts implementing the post-2015 development agenda.
These reforms must reflect current realities and ensure the full voice and participation of developing countries in their decision-making and norm setting.
He lauded the land reform program for empowering the black majority people in the country. Reporting for VOA Studio 7 at the United Nations in New York, this is Sandra Nyaira.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn says efforts to stabilize the conflict in Somalia have made progress. He says while the militant group Al-Shabaab may not yet be completely destroyed, it has been greatly degraded. Speaking Thursday at the United Nations General Assembly in New York, Mr. Haile Mariam called for continued international support to help Somalia rebuild itself.
Al-Shabaab may not have been entirely removed as a threat, but it has been greatly degraded. The recent setback it suffered is bound to speed up its demise. The military gains made on the ground could not be sustained, however, without progress in the political track through the establishment of local administrations and the maintenance of law and order in the newly liberated areas. In this regard, We welcome the establishment of interim local administration in Central and Southwest Somalia in line with the provisional federal constitution. We need to continue to support Somalia to rebuild itself and make a successful transition by 2016.
Mr. Halemariam expressed disappointment with the lack of progress in the efforts by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, to find a peaceful solution to the nine-month-old South Sudan conflict.
Progress in peacemaking can hardly be contemplated when there is lack of sufficient commitment to a peaceful resolution of a crisis by the parties to the conflict. But IGAD is determined to express every possible effort to find a lasting solution to the crisis through an all-inclusive political dialogue.
That was Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn speaking Thursday at the 69th United Nations General Assembly in New York. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon had strong words for the leaders in South Sudan on Thursday, telling them to find an inclusive power-sharing arrangement and end the instability and violence that their country has endured over the past 9 months. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir has more.
Mr. Ban addressed his remarks to President Salva Kiir and his former vice president and political rival, Riek Machar.
You opened the wounds that have caused so much suffering. Now heal them.
South Sudan has been mired in conflict since December. The UN chief said the violence has killed tens of thousands and uprooted nearly 2 million people. Instead of thriving, he warned that South Sudan is failing. Talks to end the violence resumed last week in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, and mediators have warned that time is running out. Mr. Ban said he is appalled by the dire humanitarian situation South Sudan has been thrown into because of the political infighting.
Around 4 million people, more than a third of the entire country, suffer alarming food insecurity. Unless we act quickly, some 50,000 children could die before the end of this year.
The United Nations is sheltering nearly 100,000 civilians fleeing the violence at its bases in Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity State, and in the capital, Juba. Human rights groups have demanded that the UN Security Council impose an arms embargo and targeted sanctions against the warring parties. The UN has deployed an additional 5,000 peacekeepers to reinforce its mission in South Sudan. The final battalion of about 700 troops is due to arrive from China next month. UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ledsous expressed his frustration with the parties, saying it has been a very long story of agreements made, but none kept. He added that there can be no military solution to the conflict, and those who impede peace negotiations or commit atrocities will ultimately have to face consequences.
There will be no amnesty for those people or leaders who have been responsible for killing innocent civilians that had sought refuge in schools, in hospitals, in places of worship.
President Kiir was expected to attend the high-level meeting, which included the chairperson of the African Union Commission, the UN humanitarian chief, Valerie Amos, and representatives of several governments. When he failed to show up, Mr. Kiir's foreign minister said the president was detained at another meeting. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Human rights groups and Central Africans have welcomed the decision by the Hague-based International Criminal Court to open a second war crimes investigation in conflict-torn Central African Republic. Lisa Bryant has more for VOA from Paris.
The International Criminal Court will probe atrocities, including murder, rape, and persecution that have taken place since conflict erupted in the Central African Republic in 2012. This is the second investigation by the Hague-based court targeting the country. Former CAR Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba is on trial for crimes committed more than a decade ago. In a statement Wednesday, ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda described the list of atrocities committed in the Central African Republic as endless. The alleged crimes, she said, cannot be ignored. African Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch, Anneke van Woudenberg, described the new probe as extremely good news.
There's obviously been significant human rights abuses of the most serious nature, war crimes, crimes against humanity that have been committed in CAR. And it's clear that there has been complete impunity for such crimes. And this announcement by the prosecutor of the ICC will hopefully send a strong message that justice is now coming and those responsible could be brought to The Hague.
Rights advocates say about 5,000 people have been killed and hundreds of thousands have been displaced since Seleka rebels staged a coup in the Central African Republic. In her statement, Ms. Bensouda blamed both the mostly Muslim rebels and mostly Christian anti-Balaka militia for the atrocities. Critics claim the ICC is biased against Africa and moves too slowly in delivering justice. But Van Woudenberg notes CAR's own president, Catherine Samba-Panza, requested this investigation. And the complexity of probing war crimes, she says, takes time.
It's important that those most responsible for the crimes are held to account, and that takes significant time to systematically collect the information, interview witnesses. So is this going to be quick justice? No. Is it going to be good justice? I very much hope so.
For decades, Van Woudenberg says, no justice at all has been delivered in CAR. With the ICC probe, there is a chance that cycle will be broken. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Hosts Egypt play Mali as Algeria face Mozambique at the African Women's Under-18 Basketball Championships in Cairo today, Friday. In classification matches, Botswana challenge Ivory Coast as Angola engage Tunisia. In Uganda, Egypt play Kenya in the men's contest, while Uganda engage Egypt in the women's event at the Africa Zone 5 Basketball Championships in Kampala today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Somalia challenge Egypt as Kenya engage Uganda in the men's contest, while Kenya play Egypt in the women's event. On Sunday, Uganda and Rwanda men clash in the last match of the week-long contest. Moving on to rugby, the three-day Safaricom Safari Rugby Sevens tournament gets underway in Nairobi, Kenya today, Friday. Africa's most prestigious seven-a-side tournament has attracted teams from Argentina, Australia, Britain, Fiji, Germany, New Zealand, Samoa, South Africa, Spain, Uganda, and hosts Kenya. The program also includes a schools and women's tournament. Kenya is keen to showcase their ability to stage a successful seven-a-side tournament, hoping to secure the right to host one of the IRB World 7 Series events in future. Turning to football, defending champions Ivory Coast host Angola, Nigeria tackle Gabon as Tunisia face Mali in the return leg of their Orange African Under-17 Championship qualifiers this weekend. Togo play Guinea, Ghana host Cameroon, Uganda is at home to Zambia, and Egypt play South Africa. Meanwhile, Tunisia's CS Sfaxien welcome AS Vita from the Democratic Republic of Congo in Sfax on Saturday, while the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe host Algeria's Entente Setif in Lubumbashi on Sunday in the return leg of the Orange African Champions League semifinals. Elsewhere, the Republic of Congo's AEC Leopards engage Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports in Dolisi on Saturday, and Egypt's El Ahly play Cameroon's Cotton Sport in Cairo on Sunday in the return leg of the Orange Africa Confederations Cup semi-finals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday. And that's it for this Friday, September 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.